Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about modifying beliefs. And of course we all have beliefs and ideas that we think are true. And sometimes they're very different than the other people in the room, right? And we need to reach consensus. And we need to think about our beliefs, the beliefs of our participants, and how we're going to kind of come towards the middle and modify what we believe so that we can exactly, yes, thank you. One of the things that we mainly believe is that we can reach consensus and go forward. Isn't that lots of folk are saying that? They're saying, well, the main belief I've got is that we're going to be able to do this, right? Yeah. That's the main belief any leader should have, right? We're gonna reach this. We're going to reach consensus and go forward to a successful outcome. Yes, fabulous. Mm-hmm. So, as we often do on this show, and that's, of course, going to be probably our first one, as we often do on this show because it is unscripted, let's think about the different kinds of beliefs that we have. The different kinds of, well, preconceptions, right? That's a belief, is a preconception, really. People call it a preconceived notion, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Some people are talking about bias and stereotyping and like that. Let's think more on the positive side and say that it's not so much, well, I suppose that we'll talk about that a bit, about a belief about a certain type of person, a certain type of, well, a certain type of other people's beliefs, really. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, something that we as leader, if we have such a thing, will be very aware of because we are third-party impartial, right? We're the leader. And we are not to have a bias towards the one side or the other or against one side or the other. And that's a very important point that we need to be aware of whether or not we've got a bias and really, really work to not let it impede the process in any way because we're fair people. And we know that it's a preconceived notion and a bias and something cultural and ingrained in us maybe from our childhood and like that. Yeah, but we need to all work together to get our successful outcome. And we as leader are always the good example, right? Right. We're always a good example. And we are a good example of being unbiased, of being neutral, right? Yeah. Yes, I may indeed practice Christianity. I go to church every Sunday. This is a true statement. But when I am dealing with participants or other leaders who are not Christians, I accept that they are not of my religion, and I am very careful not to be biased about that. Yeah. And sometimes people have truly different moral value systems than I do. And it's somewhat of a cultural thing. And we will handle that up front. We will talk about it. We will understand that in this particular instance of this particular issues, we will reach consensus and we will go forward, right? Yeah. Yes. People are saying it's a trust issue. I take that on an individual basis. I do. I don't think that one type of religion, one type of ethnicity, one type of any kind of people is less trustworthy than any other kind. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I know lots of untrustworthy Christians. And as people, I mean, it has nothing to do with the religion, because if they were truly Christians, they wouldn't be untrustworthy now, would they? No. And so that is something to consider on an individual basis. How kind of a person is this? Not what do they look like or what do they worship. What kind of a person, right? And we can make a judgment. We can go for the more in-depth, right? Yes. People are talking about the 5W questions. This is true, too. When you're dealing with somebody new, you might want to listen to anybody that you know who is trustworthy, who your opinion you respect, as to their reputation, right? Their reputation in the community. You might also engage in, especially when I meet new people, I like to know these things. You might engage in the 5W questions, right? So that you get to know them a little better and you get to think about their answers, right? Right. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Now, you don't ask them all one after another, usually, but you get down to the basis for things like that, right? The basis for somebody's belief. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, they ask you the same 5W questions as we go along, right? Who, what, where, when, and why, so that they know your basis, your foundation, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And since you know that you're going to be asked these questions, you might think about the answers and think about yourself. Well, why not? A little self-reflection never hurt anybody. And think about whether or not that's good, that's true. That's something that we are proud of our foundation, right? Or is it something that's kind of, oh, that doesn't seem very good, you see? Yeah. So those are important seminal questions, important ideas about what kind of people are we dealing with, not what kind by color, by gender, by religion, by ethnicity, but what kind of person is this that we need to reach consensus with? And that's very important, yeah, because you need to work together on at least these specific issues. Maybe never again, but you're working now, and that's the important point, right? Right, yeah. So, what type of other beliefs and preconceptions do we encounter within our context? Within the context of dispute resolution, consensus building, alternative dispute resolution, right? Even a workshop and a seminar. Because sometimes, especially if the workshop or seminar is not in your country or is on conference call, on Skype, essentially speaking, and you've got all kinds of different people from all over the world, or it is in some way contentious because you're teaching people how to get along but they already don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that makes for a different group dynamic than just I've come to learn something. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, or even I've come to fulfill credits. You know, that's true, too. We actually give all kinds of continuing education credits for different professions in the United States that are mandated by your licensing. Yeah, and so that's kind of important, too. Mm-hmm. So what beliefs and preconceptions do we encounter within our context, within the context of those areas? Oh, we've got lots of people. You know what? I'm going to divide it up. I am, because we've got our beliefs and preconceptions as leader, and then we've got our participants' beliefs and preconceptions as, well, all right, as participants, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So let's do leaders first. Let's do us first. And then let's think about our participants' beliefs and preconceptions. Mm-hmm. So, what do the leaders have?
Yes, I think the number one that we're going to talk about is the belief that we know what will happen.
Yeah, we're confident that we know exactly what's going to happen because we've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Under that, we're going to do know the reaction of our participants.
Mm-hmm.
The reaction of other leaders. And the belief that we know what will happen with the public. And I'm going to put media and politicians under that because they are kind of the public. They're outsiders to our group, but they have influence. They could indeed impact us both negatively or positively.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go with this one too. Leaders sometimes have the belief that they're in control.
Yeah,
that we've got this handled, right? Belief that we're in control.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do for participants' beliefs and preconceptions. I think they are also sometimes leader beliefs and preconceptions. I think that all of us sometimes think these things. How about the belief that the process will be fast and easy?
Yeah. You know, sometimes leaders believe that too. I actually never believe it because that's been my experience, that nothing's ever fast and easy if we're trying to reach consensus. But a lot of participants believe that. Seems simple enough, right? And I think a lot of leaders believe that too. They're also under the seems simple enough theory.
I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good too. The belief that the leader will provide answers and instructions. You're our leader. Tell us what to do. Right? The belief is the leader will provide all the answers and instructions on what to do. Hey, you're in charge. Just tell us what to do and we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the last one is that this is a real valid point for both participants and leaders. The belief that they already know everything and do not need experts.
Yes.
Sometimes we recommend bringing in an expert, asking somebody else's opinion, and our participants balk. They say, what do we need that for? We already know it. We don't need somebody else to tell us what we already know. I'm kind of big on having third eyes, somebody who's not close to it. Look at what we're about to do and see if there's some flaws. See if there's something that we've overlooked, right?
Yeah, I try to minimize unintended consequences is what it really is.
Yeah, so I'm kind of big on that, and sometimes participants really can't see the point. And some leaders don't like to bring in experts either because there's always a chance that the expert might be smarter than the leader, I think. But I don't worry about that. No, because I'm definitely the smartest. No, because I want to reach the successful outcome that will really be workable and will really not have a bunch of, whoops, we didn't think about that, right? No, and that's what an expert is for. They really tell you when you haven't understood the situation properly is what it really is.
Yeah,
and that's a very important thing to know in my personal opinion.
Yeah, we haven't really thought this through exactly.
Yeah, let's think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's get started on these before we run out of time. How about the belief that the leader knows the participant reaction?
Mm-hmm.
As Christine says, past experience is informative, but not exact indicator of the future. Past experience is informative, but not an exact indicator of the future. Isn't that true? Because we think we know what's going to happen because we've seen it before, right? And the issues seem the same. And like that, you know, sometimes in the United States, if you're going for something for the states to do, and you go from state to state on a ballot, for example, it seems like it's the same thing, the same problem, the same issues. But it never is. It seems like, you know, we've done it 17 times, there's 52 states, 17 times, certainly the 18th time we should know how it should go smooth and easy, which we're going to get to. And the answer is no, because you're dealing with different people. Yeah. And it's informative, and you can point over there and say, look, it worked. This is what we did. It was a really good idea. It brought in lots of extra revenue. But did I mention you're dealing with different people? Yes, and different politicians, too, which we're also going to get to. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very good point that Lee is making. Lee says individual reactions change when you become part of a group. This is surprisingly true. Individual reactions change when you become part of a group. You could know the people, the individuals that are going to participate, but when they get together as a group, the group dynamic takes over, and it does change. It makes people change their mind about stuff, right? Yeah. And it's very kind of weird, but it's true, that when individuals get into a group, they a lot of them change their or modify their beliefs according to the group. And sometimes according to the kind of leaders of the group, the stronger members. And because some people are more extroverted and more definite than others in every group. And that's why the leader has to give everybody a chance to speak and get their opinions heard, right? Because we want to modify our beliefs to get to the middle, to reach consensus, but we don't want to modify our beliefs away from the middle and away from consensus. Does that make sense? And have somebody kind of creating a divide within the group. That would be bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a good point, too, that Alex is making, that often the participants themselves are unsure how they will react. Yes, often the participants themselves are unsure how they will react. That's a real good point. So you see that oftentimes in the United States is, of course, the jury system. And it's a real easy way of thinking about it. And a lot of your countries, this is, of course, a global show, and a lot of your countries do not particularly have juries, but a jury is a without deliberate selection, a random selection of citizens who were asked to come and listen to a case and make a consensus and a decision about it. They listen to all the evidence, all the facts. You've seen it, yes, thank you, you've seen it on television if you don't actually have a jury system in your country. And people come with beliefs and preconceptions, because everybody has beliefs and preconceptions, but they don't actually know how they're going to react until they hear it all and they get into the jury room and talk with each other. And sometimes they surprise themselves, I think, because you can ask the juries afterwards questions about the deliberation and like that. And a lot of times people are kind of breathless. I mean, they're kind of surprised by themselves that they did it and like that. Yeah. And so sometimes participants don't know how they will react in a certain situation. And you, as leader, certainly don't know how they're going to react either. Because if they don't, you don't either. Right? Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's get on to the next one. Yes. The belief that you'll know the reaction of other leaders. Other leaders are kind of you, right? They're leading something. They are truly committed. And they've got participants following them. Yeah? Thank you. Mohammed says that you need to understand their power base so they can retain their own influence. Oh, Mohammed, you are so right. You need to, when you're dealing with other leaders, you can't say, come with me and be under me and be a participant. They don't want to be a participant. They want to be a leader bringing their participants
Yeah. As Mohammed says, you need to understand their power base so they can retain their own influence. And this is oftentimes misunderstood. And I must say that it's oftentimes misunderstood by my own country. We go into some place and it's already got some sort of a governing system, a feudal system maybe, and we go, that's not good, let's give them all democracy. No, you have to understand the power base and help people retain their own influence, or else they will fight. They will not make consensus of you. You will not make an understanding. I don't care how good it would be for the cause. I really don't. I've seen this time and time again when people have tried it, and then I'm called in sometimes. And the key is, yes, we all want to have whatever it is occur. But as leaders, we want to retain our power base and our influence too. We don't want to give up being leader is the key to it. I don't want to give up being leader because we should all get together and greater is better than one, right? And we could pool our resources. I got all that. I got the pooling resources thing, the greater voice in the community thing. But where do I, as a leader, fit in? Am I still going to be a leader? See, that's the question. And that's what you have to understand that people want to know, even though they don't say it. So, got to think about that. How would you feel if somebody said, I'm smarter than you are and I'm a leader of this group, you come over here and bring your participants and you could be a participant too? Well, wouldn't you kind of like to have a leadership role since you were leader over here? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Ellen and others are saying you need to include the other leaders in the process so that they can embrace cooperation and work together. Yes, include them in the process. Not only include them in the process, but find a co-leadership agreement, a co-leadership let's all work together type thing. Yes? Yes, Thomas and I are saying that the other leaders also need to control their participants. Not everybody smoothly integrates, right? And maybe we shouldn't integrate. Maybe what we should really do is we should work together separately and keep our groups and keep our participants and keep our leadership, but work together symbiotically and not have one fold into another. We can still have our organization. We can still have our participants. Who like participating with this leader, right? Like participating within this group. Mm-hmm. But we can work together to solve a common problem and kind of put up a united front when dealing with those who can help us to solve it, like politicians and the media and things like that, right? Yeah, we don't have to be the same group. We can be various groups working together. You see this with churches all the time, with religious organizations. And not necessarily churches, but places of worship and organizations like that. They want some sort of social change. And it's a good idea for all of them. It's a good idea for the world, usually. So they make what they call a coalition. Nobody loses their power. Nobody loses their followers. Nobody loses their pulpit, so to speak. I mean, whatever you call where your religious leader preaches from. But they work together, and they have strength in numbers, right? Yeah. So it's not a question of losing anything. It's a question of gaining more influence, right? Yeah. So that's all good. So the other leaders do need to control their participants. They need to come back, and they need to say, you know, we all want the same thing. It would be a good idea. Let us make a coalition with these other groups who ordinarily we don't particularly deal with, but let us make a coalition and go forward, right? Yeah. So that's always always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's take our next belief as leader, because quite frankly, I don't know about this. The belief that you know the reaction of the public and the media and the politicians. I grouped them all together because they're really outsiders, right? The belief that we as leaders, and the participants too, I mean, all of these go across the board for leaders and participants, that we know the reaction of the public, the media, and the politicians. And quite frankly, the reaction of the public is often influenced by the media, as are politicians. They're influenced by both. The public, because we got to vote for them in this country. And if you don't live in a democracy, because this is, of course, a global show, politicians probably still have some thought about what the people want. And if it's something they can do and aggrandize themselves in the process, you've got a pretty good chance. Excuse me, because politicians really, really live to be followed and adored, so to speak. Mm-hmm. This is a good point. Brian says you need to be proactive and prevent misconceptions and problems. Yes. I'm in favor of being proactive. I am. If we're trying to do something that will change the way things are done, even proactive within a culture, like a corporate culture, right? I like to tell people, those that are going to be affected, the public, the media, and politicians, that what we're going to do, what we're going to try to do, and I do like to invite them in to help. Because usually what we're trying to do is good. At least we think it is. And proactive, and to tell folk and to give them our side of it is kind of a mighty fine idea, because then we don't have the surprise element, and we don't have the anger element that goes with that surprise, right? And the knee-jerk, I don't want that kind of response. No, it needs to be explained ahead of time or during. That's a judgment call, of course, but it's not a bad thing to be proactive, especially with the media. Yes, a lot of you were talking about designating a spokesperson. Recipe for Peace Now greatly advocates that. We do. Yes, and we our prior shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. We talk about designating a spokesperson many times. The reason being is it's so important that one person be the mouth, and that whatever they say is carefully thought about ahead of time so that it can't be twisted and misunderstood. Yes, there are lots of folk out there who would greatly like to misunderstand, and they do it willfully, I think, to a certain level. Yeah, sometimes they do. Sometimes they just kind of, they take something and they interpret it in a way that it wasn't meant to be interpreted with statement. And I think a lot of times they know that. It's just to their own benefit, their own power base as leaders of some sort of a strange group to do so. Right? Yeah. A lot of times if you're trying to change the status quo, the people who like the status quo, and quite frankly, there's lots of them, that's why it's the status quo, right? The people who like it will fight back. Sometimes they will use the media as a platform for that. And politicians and the public do listen to the media. So it's important to be proactive if you need to be, and to designate a spokesperson,
right? Designate somebody to be the person who is in charge of explaining things, right? And to that end, I am very, very big on one of the rules that we have. In fact, we have very few rules. It's like two of them. Be civil to each other. And don't make comments and text and a blog and stuff like that during the process. We will discuss with the spokesperson what needs to be put out. The spokesperson might be the blogger. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone standing in a microphone speaking anymore, although they're called spokesperson, but it could be the person that's running the blog, right? But we don't want everybody during the process making comments and tweeting and like that, because that's in writing. It'll be there forever, and somebody will take it out of context and really blow it up if they feel like it, right? Right. So, no, I'm very big on control your trigger finger. Control your use of devices. Yes, very important. This is a good point that Suki is making. She says, when you deal with the media and politicians, you need to understand their self-interests of sensationalism. Yeah, they kind of like to blow it out of the water, don't they? A self-interest of sensationalism. I want to be important. I want my name up front. I want to stand with a bullhorn and insist on something, right? A self-interest of sensationalism is something that does need to be taken into account. Yes, people are saying, or lack a self-interest in no sensationalism. They want to not have stuff come out into the public. That's a true statement too, right? Yeah. How about this next belief of leaders, that we are in control? Yeah, people are going, I don't think so. James and others are saying that the self-belief that you are in control is usually dispelled by circumstances and participant reaction. Yeah, Cheryl and others are, and Mohammed and others, Mohammed says that you need to control the process using your leadership style. You need to control the process using your leadership style. Yes, Cheryl and others are talking about different cultures expect different styles of leadership. This is really kind of true. Now, you can't completely change your style of leadership. I mean, you are what you are, and you're successful at it. But you can modify. Just as you can modify your beliefs and your preconceptions, you can modify your leadership style to a certain extent depending on what is needed. Certain cultures want you to be more of an authoritarian leader than others. And I'm not even talking about ethnic cultures. I'm talking about corporate cultures too. Sometimes the participants have been kind of, through their experiences, trained to expect a certain leadership style, right? Yeah, trained to experience, through doing it. They want you to tell them what to do. They want you to tell them what to do and not just kind of guide them. This is a different leadership style, and sometimes they want kind of a democratic leadership style where you are the facilitator more than the leader, where you facilitate the consensus, facilitate the ability to reach a conclusion, a successful outcome, and you don't really tell them how to do it, right? And that's two different leadership styles, and you have to accommodate what your participants are comfortable with, because it'll work out better, plain and simple. It will be, you'll reach a better outcome. You'll reach a better, a more successful outcome when you do that. Yeah. And so it is very much a question of flexibility on the leader's side, right? Yeah, flexibility. Mm-hmm. And you do need to be somewhat flexible and to make a convivial atmosphere for your participants so that they can willingly participate and understand what is expected of them, right? Yeah, they have expectations of you as the leader. Well, you have expectations of them as the participants too, and it has to kind of all come together. Mm-hmm. I can be more authoritative. My nature is to be consensus building. You can see that. But I can help lead. I can lead in a more straightforward, authoritarian leadership style if that's what is needed to get us to the successful outcome. Right? Yeah. And I do it in a rather pleasant way. I mean, I'm not nasty to anyone. Remember the civility rules. We are models of them. But I can be quite definite about what needs to be done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the next one, which is the participant belief that the process will be fast and easy. Yeah. Sometimes leaders think that too. I actually, right up front, and we've talked about this before, prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, I'm actually kind of, I make a kind of a speech when we first start out, and I ask if anybody has any questions and like that, and make it clear the questions are always welcomed. And I give an idea of what we're going to do. I really do. Because remember that you, as leader, may have done this 737 times. But this is probably your participants' first. And their first time with you. And their first time with these other participants. And maybe even their first mediation experience. Aren't they lucky that they got you? But they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know how this is going to work. They're suspicious. And they're kind of scared if it is an employment-type situation, right? Yeah, they're kind of worried about it, kind of scared that it will adversely impact their employment somehow. Yeah, that's kind of bad, right? Yeah, and so it's important that they understand that it won't, that we're going to be calm, that it's going to be fine, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you need to really understand that and let them understand and have full transparency. Mm-hmm. Caroline and others are talking about efficiency in the process. Yes. And you will be extremely efficient. You will tell them that you're going to be extremely efficient. The process is not going to take a long time because we are kind of inefficient or delayed in some way. Yeah, you ever have that where really it's kind of messy? Can I say that? And it's messy because there's lack of efficiency and lack of transparency. And you're not sure what's going on or when things are supposed to happen or what it is exactly you're supposed to do, and there's no one to ask. You ever been in a group like that? Do not have groups like that. No, because you don't want to participate like that. Well, neither do they. I mean, nobody wants to be in a group that's run inefficiently and you don't know what's going on. Make sure you don't have one. Make sure you have transparency. Everybody knows what's going on. And people are kept in the loop on information and other things that are happening, right? Because we don't meet all the time in actual person. And be extremely efficient. I advocate getting help if you can possibly afford it and do so. Because I guess because I find the nitty-gritty day-to-day pass it around stuff, make a circle, keep everybody informed type process part to be time-consuming and tedious, and I don't have time. I guess I find it tedious because I'm not real efficient at it either. And so you do need somebody who will keep track, keep the spreadsheets, keep the track of deadlines. Very, very important not to blow an actual deadline, like a filing deadline, right? Right. Yeah, you need somebody to keep you on the straight and narrow, to keep you from not being efficient in some way, right? Yeah, and that's very important. Yes, you need someone to really show you how to really keep track. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really important for efficiency and for whether it's going to be easy and fast. Also, and this is a funny point that Anna and others are making, and I kind of agree secretly, if you have a feeling as leader that certain issues and group and like that and get to our successful outcome is going to take, well, you can make kind of an estimate about how long it's going to take, right? You have experience and you kind of understand how long these things take. Unless there's an actual deadline, get it on the ballot type deadline for collecting signatures and getting the wording straight and like that. Unless there's an actual deadline, my advice truly is, I'm with Anna and everybody else who's saying this, to estimate longer. Because then when it comes in less, when it comes in a shorter, faster, everybody would be terribly impressed that you did it really before the deadline, never mind at the deadline. Yeah, estimate longer, if you can. The next topic that we were going to talk about, and we're kind of pushing forward, otherwise we're going to run out of time, which we sometimes do. We're going to try to get to one of the recipes. I know the pork chili's been kind of hanging around as a recipe for a little while. Yeah, we don't always make it, but that's because we have such wonderful conversations. The next is the participant belief that the leader will provide all the answers. There's kind of a misconception that leaders do that, that we actually come in and we provide the answers. We tell you what the solution is and how to get there. And then we say, my leadership is over. And everyone is satisfied. The successful solution shows up. And our job is done. Right? Right. Yeah. There's kind of a weird belief that needs to be modified, right, that the leader has all the answers, will provide them, and will show you how to get there. Now, maybe we do have some answers and some ideas of how to get there because we have experience and we're the leader. But you always need consensus. You need buy-in. You need people to understand how come and what we're doing. Yeah, you always need consensus because otherwise people won't do it. They will nod their head and look like they're going to do it, whatever it is, but it is not true. So you're going to need to ask consensus. Yeah, this is a good point, too. Hiromira, thank you, says that you need transparency concerning your role in the process. You got to tell people why you're there and what the leader is going to do, what my role is as leader in relationship to you, participants, and how we are going to reach consensus and go forward. It's a good point. You plain ordinary tell them how it's going to work because then they'll know. Yeah, it's a really good thing. Point two, Martina says sometimes the leader role may be to make the final decision and initiate action. I've done that, yeah. sometimes the leader role is to make the final decision and initiate action. We've thought about it. We have considered all the options. And there may be more than one really good, really considered option. Now, how are we going to decide which one to do? Now, generally, I'm in favor of anonymous voting in that situation. Let's all vote for which one we think would be the best. Yeah. And because it's hard, but because all of our crystal balls are broken, and it's hard to know which one's going to be the best, right? So let's vote. And then we'll try whichever the majority says first and see if that's a good idea. And if not, we will try the next ones, right? The next idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What if there's a tie? Well, then the leader oftentimes will make the final decision, right? And initiate the action. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm big on the vote. I guess, especially if I truly as leader think that they're both real viable options. Or maybe there's more than one, but more than two. But usually there's you boil it down to two. If I think they're both equally viable, and I don't know which one's going to work better because I don't know the future really either, I'm big on taking a vote for it, right? Yeah. Let's see what we all think. Let's see if there's a consensus on that, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about the belief that experts are unnecessary? This is a belief that we see in both leaders and participants, that that's the truth, where people think, well, you know, we've got this covered. What do we need to bring in an expert for? Takes time, takes money, takes effort, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, Yi and others are saying, and I agree with it, that experts are for double-checking the facts and conclusions before acting. Experts are for double-checking facts and conclusions before acting. Yes. Okay, we're kind of close to this. We've been working on it for a while. We've thrashed it through. We've reached consensus, and we're proud. But let's think about it. Let's wonder if there's something we haven't thought of. And we won't know what that something we haven't thought of is because we haven't thought of it. I mean, we don't know what the question is because we don't know to ask it. I see that sometimes. Yeah, we've all gotten together. We've all reached consensus. We've all thought it through. We're all pretty certain that we've got it. In fact, we're very certain that we've got it. And if there's some sort of another question to be asked, some sort of another viewpoint, some sort of a consequence that's about to occur when we initiate action, we don't know what it is. And that's the rule of an expert. To come in maybe at the end and take a good look and to think about it and to bring up areas that might not be covered. I mean, we might have done it all. The expert might be incredibly impressed. And sometimes we have that too. Mm-hmm. Yes. As Sarah and others are saying, we need to make informed decisions. And an expert is one way to be informed, right? Yeah. Informed decisions. Yes. A lot of people are saying that experts reveal unintended consequences. If you do it like this, this will happen. And we go, whoop. Didn't realize that, right? Yeah, so experts are really to prevent the unintended consequence so that we've really got something good. We've really got something efficient. We've really got something that'll, for heaven's sakes, work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the experts are really for the unintended consequences, more so than anything else. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to reach consensus. We're going to have a convivial atmosphere. We're going to be able to really talk to each other. And one of the ways to help that is to have some food in the room. Yes, I did save enough time. Not very much time, but we'll make it for one of the recipes. And I know that you guys like it. I get emails if I don't do the recipes. And the food is really a tool. Now, it might also be that we're hungry. I mean, it's delicious and it's fun and like that. But it's also a way for the leader to call a timeout if things are getting maybe a smidge uncivil. It's a way for us to get together informally over doing something we like so that we get to know each other better and we get to see each other as people, right? And it's fun to have some food in the room, to have a potluck, to maybe even have a glass of wine would be charming if everybody's okay with that. And so what you need to do is you need to take, before you have food, you need to take a survey. You need to find out if anybody has any allergies, any kind of food they won't eat, or any kind of a prohibition, a religious prohibition to a type of food. And you disseminate this information so everybody knows. Then you ask people when they bring something to also bring a list, not what it's called, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down this list and I can see if I can eat whatever it is. Yeah, is it something that I can eat, something that I know about, right? And I think that we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what is a safe recipe? A safe recipe is a recipe that my people would have eaten in the past, right? Would be familiar with, would be something that they know about and say, oh, I can eat that. I've eaten that before and I like it, right? And not something that's a surprise. Mm-hmm. A safe recipe, usually I bring it as leader, so we have at least one or two in the room. However, this is going to be our adventure recipe, because we get one safe and one adventure recipe each time, right? Right. This is an adventure recipe because it has pork. And pork is something that a lot of people don't eat or have a religious prohibition to. So it's a lovely pork chili. And yes, you could substitute meat and make it more of a safe recipe. But you'd still have to, you have quite a few different kinds of ingredients, so people would have to still read it, if you know what I mean. This is also what a lot of you ask for. It's a slow cooker recipe, a crock pot. I adore my slow cooker. Also, you can put it on in the room if you can get there early enough, because it takes quite a few hours. I mean, let's face it. And if you put it on high, it's going to take 5 hours. So, but you could have it going by the time people come in, and it smells fabulous. And then it's all ready to eat. And what? If you came in 4 hours ahead of time, you could have an hour's worth of meeting, and then there it is. It's all done and delicious. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I do like a slow cooker. I own a giant one. And this would go with beef also. Pork's a little more delicious because it's a softer product. Mm-hmm. So let's have 3 pounds of boneless pork shoulder. It's kind of a cheap cut. It's good for this, though, because slow cookers are great with a cheap cut. Let's trim off some of the fat so it's not greasy and cut it into 1-inch cubes. So some sort of, you don't have to use fancy pork for this. And we're going to cut it into chunks. Let's have 3 15-ounce cans of, one each of black beans, kidney beans, and chickpeas. One each, black beans, kidney beans, and chickpeas. When you got beans like that, you've got to rinse them, right? Because they're in slime. So rinse them and drain them. Let's have 2 nice big 15-ounce cans of diced tomatoes. We're going to use the juice and everything. You know, around here, you can get diced tomatoes a whole bunch of ways. If you get the diced tomatoes with the onions and the garlic, you've already added more taste. So I get the diced tomatoes with the onions and the garlic. We could probably have a smaller can, like a 8-ounce can of chopped tomatoes with green chili peppers, if you can find such a thing. Yes, because it'll give you the green chili peppers for the spiciness of the chili. If not, you can get some little canned green chili peppers or else use a jalapeno minced very fine. I take out the seeds. I just don't like spicy. And I don't like to put out spicy because you can't take it back. If I put out a more bland chili, I know it's going to be kind of bland. I'm not going to put peppers and jalapenos and stuff in there. If I put on a more bland chili, but on the side I have jalapeno chili peppers and Tabasco sauce and like that, then people can do as much spicy as they like. And people that don't like spicy, well, they're not precluded from eating the chili. Right? Right. So I will not put, I'm going to tell you not to put the can of tomatoes with the green chili peppers because I don't want you to make it too spicy. Let's have a cup and a half of chopped celery, a nice big green pepper chopped up, you know, seed and vein and like that. Red pepper chopped up, seed and vein and like that. You know you're going to need a really big slow cooker for this, right? Right. If you don't have such a big one, just divide the recipe. Let's have 3 garlic cloves chopped up. Let's have a teaspoon of dried oregano. Mm-hmm. You know I'm not going to put much chili powder in this, right? I'm calling it chili, but did I explain about not too spicy? I'm going to just put like a teaspoon of chili powder in. Maybe kind of a scant teaspoon. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to look in your crock pot. You've got all this stuff in there, right, in your slow cooker. And you're going to put as many, a cup or two of tomato juice or vegetable juice for liquid, right? But you're not going to overfill it because you don't want it to go over. Yeah. So you are going to decide how much extra liquid you need, right? You don't fill a crock pot all the way to the top liquid-wise because the meat and stuff will make some liquid, right? Right. Okay. You got your slow cooker. Everything's been combined. Yay, team. Just throw it all in. It's the beauty of a slow cooker. Oh, my God, I love my slow cooker. And you cover it. Because slow cookers get covered, right? And you set it on high for 4 to 5, on low 8 to 10. Who on earth? I guess overnight you could set it for low, but I never do it like that. I set it on high for 4 to 5, and there it is. It's done. It's delicious. It's food. It's made chili. And you've got lots of toppers on the side, like some shredded cheese and some sour cream and something spicy and like that. And it's popular. It's wonderful. It makes a whole big pot of it. And it's easy to do. You just put the ingredients in and let it rip, which is the best part of a slow cooker. So there we have it. That's the pork chili. And my friends, we are out of time. We just about made it. Oh, we went a smidge over. That's okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yes, you're right. I didn't say prior shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. You're absolutely right. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you. Bye-bye.